Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me is my co-host, Stephen Kerr, 65 plus years in sports journalism between the two of us. Later in the show, Framber Valdez is doing something no Astro pitcher will do this year. And there are key injuries for a couple of Houston teams, the Astros and another Houston team we're going to get to later. But first, Stephen, we're just 6 days away from when legal tampering begins. Call your friends and scream loud. It's almost legal tampering day. It's almost legal tampering day.
Okay. First of all, my first question is, when did we start using the term legal tampering? Have I been under a rock? When did we start doing that? I mean, there's illegal tampering, but when did we start talking legal tampering? I mean, how is it tampering if they're free agents? Somebody explain that to me.
Yeah, I guess it's because you can't officially sign them till 3 days later. This is so on brand for the NFL to have a legal tampering day on their calendar, Steve. It's a sport where you got to know the difference between the exclusive franchise tag and the transition tag. They don't have practice. They have organized team activities. Steven, this is the NFL. It makes you consult your attorney before you watch games.
Well, that's why they call it. They don't call it the No Fun League for nothing, do they?
Yeah, no, it's very bizarre. And we're going to be talking about the franchise tag stuff coming up. And then also a quick reminder for Rockets fans. In the last few days, I've uploaded two shows. First, I talked to Red Nation Hoops Salman Ali about Rafael Stone's future. And then I got one of the best Rockets follows on X, DeAndre Williams. We talked about Jabari's future and other things. All right, so let's go back to these Texans items, because the biggest news of the day, as you and I are recording, Dalton Schultz signs a three-year, $36 million new contract with $23.5 million guaranteed. They got the deal done. And Steven, that's $12 million a year, which is the same price tag as the franchise tag as it would have been. But obviously they lock him up for 3 years instead of one.
Yeah, I like it, Robert. I mean, I really was hoping the Texans could retain Dalton Schultz. I know he was a key part, especially as the year went on and he's got the experience and, you know, with the tight end situation, you know, kind of fluid, kind of up in the air. You know, if you didn't sign him, then you basically have to hope you can grab somebody that you probably have to maybe pay almost as much. So I think it was a good signing and a good keep in this case.
Yeah, the big deal, Stephen, when you think about it, is $12 million a year. You go, well, they just got him for the same price tag as last year, and that was only 1 year. So you figure we were probably paying him a little bit more because it was only 1 year. But you also got to consider this. The salary cap went up a ton. So $12 million last year is a lot less than $12 million is the next 3 years.
Well, that's right. You have to take that into account. It does change the balance sheet and how you do the figures now. So, no, I don't have any problem at all with the signing of Dalton Schultz, even for 3 years. I know that may be stretching it a little bit. You know, by that point, I don't know, you know, what his skill level is going to be. But at least for the here and now, I just think the Texans really needed to do this, you know, to keep that part of the offense going.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, this makes it to where you do not have to get panicky about drafting a tight end in the first three rounds. You can just go, let's get the best guy out there, wide receiver, cornerback. Those are some of the positions, defensive line, defensive end, potentially if you can't sign Grenard. You got yourself some options, and maybe you don't even have to worry about a tight end for 2 years that you have to draft. But at least, you know, you don't have to panic about one position that you were really, really shallow in. And I mean, that's the big deal, Stephen, is, you know, this is about kind of making the draft, optimizing it, I should say, as much as possible.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why, you know, you have free agency or, you know, franchise tagging things, because then, you know, once you have those guys in place, then you can find out, okay, what's left that we can go to the draft for? What position is deep? What position is not? And yeah, it definitely, especially the first few rounds. I mean, all the rounds of the draft are important, some less than others, but certainly for the first couple of rounds, first couple of picks, that's a big deal. And then the tight end, basically, you know, you could draft one in the mid to late rounds if you just wanted some depth or a project to bring somebody along. But this is just one less position that you have to worry about. And, you know, I think the key too, Robert, as much as possible, you want to keep C.J. Stroud's targets the same for as long as you can. And, you know, Dalton Schultz made some pretty big catches toward the end of the year. Just as I said, as the year went along, I just think he got more and more comfortable with Stroud, more and more comfortable with the offensive scheme, and just looked better as the season went on.
Yeah, of course, that video kept going around on social media after the signing. He made the game-saving catch of the year in that Titans game.
Exactly.
I mean, that was a big one where the ball just kind of goes to the defender's arms and then he catches it inside the five-yard line. And it was just, you know, that catch and that play helped you get the Titans win, and you felt like kept everything alive while Stroud was hurt.
you know, sometimes even if it's just one big play for the whole season, it can make your whole season. It did, at least in the postseason for the Texans. And I know at the beginning of the year, I think I remember, you know, he dropped a couple of passes. He just didn't look, I don't know, he just looked like a little ill at ease, but that certainly changed as time went on.
Aaron Wilson reported, this is another big story, that even though Saquon Barkley's interested in the Texans, which we've talked about, Caserio may go with two cheaper options, which means bringing back Singletary, Aaron Wilson says, and signing DeAndre Swift or Tony Ballard, Stephen. I had Swift and Pollard. I mean, yeah. Not Ballard, but Tony Pollard.
Tony Pollard is who you mean, right?
Yeah. I had Swift and Pollard third and fourth on my list of potential Texans running back targets just a couple of weeks ago, and those were guys we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of those will certainly be in the fold. I mean, I wouldn't mind bringing Singletary back. It's just that, you know, if there's some other options out there that might be a better fit, you know, one of the things I really liked about Motor, as they called him, it seemed like toward the end of the season is when he developed that nickname. His pass catching skills really helped too, especially as the season went along. So whomever we get, I think that you want somebody that can come out of the backfield, catch some passes, as well as, you know, obviously the main focus of running the football.
Yeah. And he's not apparently buying into this idea that, you know, you've got to go out and get this electric running back that's everybody, you know, is talking about or what. I mean, it's just, he's looking for more depth, and that's probably the best option with running backs, because I mean, it's just, you can't count on, oh, we got this main guy, but he's on a second contract. And then what if he starts to fall off and you put all your money into one basket?
Yeah, I think that's very smart. And, you know, it kind of leads me to think, Robert, and some of our listeners may not be, you know, may be too young to remember this, but you and I certainly do. Remember when running backs were the top choice in the draft in the first round, or at least in the first round at all? Earl Campbell, Tony Dorsett, you know, those are two names right there. The running back is just not as valued now. Of course, it's still an important position because it sets up your passing game. But in the terms of financial value, it's definitely changed. And I think that's smart thinking by Caserio, because they do what it, you know, it used to be. It was an old figure. I don't know if it's changed, but the average running back is what, 4 years in the NFL? So that's not very long. So that's probably, if you can get somebody younger that can have at least almost the same skill level, that's probably a better thing. And then maybe draft one in the mid to later rounds and somebody might come through for you.
Yeah. And again, if they do that move, if they, you know, sign two guys instead of one, that makes it much less necessary for you to draft a running back in this draft. And that lets you do different things and get the guys that you want. And the other thing that I think about, because the running back was probably somebody that was going to be drafted fourth round and beyond, let's say. So say they get two guys and they go, okay, we don't need to draft a running back. Or if we got one, we might have to drop one fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round just to be safe, because who knows about Damian Pierce and what he can do. So yeah. Then that tells me, Stephen, that, you know, now they have the option of, if we want to move up in the first three, we know Caserio likes to move up.
Well, that's right. I was just thinking that earlier today.
And he usually takes those later round picks to move up. That's something else to think about.
Well, you know, you said Damian Pierce, and you led it right into something else I was thinking about. I think that's why it is crucial to get two guys, because do we know who Damian Pierce really is? You know, he had a great first year, not so great a second year. So you really don't know what you have in Damian Pierce, and you won't know until this coming season starts. So yeah, I just think it was smart on several fronts that maybe it's better if you go with two backs, and we'll see what they actually do once free agency gets here.
All right, let's go to another report. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler says, watch the Texans for free agent defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, who was not franchised and has not been signed by the Dolphins. It looks like he's going to hit free agency. That was somebody that USA Today's John Crumpler pinpointed as a good fit for the Texans when he was on our show a couple of weeks ago. Also, a couple of sources say the Texans could be interested in trading for Eagles outside linebacker and pass rusher Hassan Reddick. Reddick's been in the Pro Bowl the last 2 years, 27 combined sacks his last two seasons. But Stephen, he wants a new deal, and you would assume it's going to be close to that $20 million that Grenard is going to want. But he's 29, not in his mid-20s like Grenard. So I'm not too sure about any interest in Hassan Reddick.
Yeah, especially if you're going to have to trade for him. Again, it would depend on what the Dolphins would want to give up for him. So I still think signing Grenard is a better option. You're still taking a chance, you know, especially with the injury he had and just, you know, he's had one good year. That doesn't make a great player necessarily, but I'd almost rather take my chance on a younger Grenard than giving a big deal to a guy that's approaching 30.
Also, speaking of franchise tags, who's off the board for the Texans now? Because they did get designated with the franchise tag on Tuesday. Jags linebacker Josh Allen, Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman, Carolina linebacker Brian Burns, and Ravens defensive tackle Justin Madubuike. We've been talking about some of these guys over the last few weeks.
Love them.
Yeah, and Steven, the other player off the board, to the disappointment of Texans fans, you know, they wanted this guy, wide receiver Michael Evans. Mike Evans, the Galveston Ball native, signed a two-year, $41 million deal, which is, you know, less years than I thought you might have to dole out for Mike Evans. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. But, I mean, you average it out, what is that, $20.5 million a year? And I don't know if there were, you know, other incentives or bonuses put in there. But, yeah, that doesn't surprise me that the Texans – I know that the Texans fans, that we even talked about it, Robert, we kind of fantasized about, you know, what would it be like to have Mike Evans on a roster with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. I didn't really – deep in my mind, I didn't think it was going to happen. And that's quite a bit of money that you're going to pay for a wide receiver that, quite frankly, you know, there are some guys out there that you can get cheaper, and the draft is pretty deep in wide receivers. So while it is disappointing, sure, you'd like to have the guy, but I don't think that the Texans were interested in going that front, especially if he was going to sign for that kind of money.
Yeah, you just said the key thing. Anybody who watched the combine over the last few days, that was the conversation. The wide receiver position is just loaded. We sort of knew that.
And fast wide receivers too, not just receivers in general.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy, I guess. Everybody's talking about he ran like, what, a 4.2 or something?
Yeah, that was amazing. Former Longhorn, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, with NFL free agency starting next week, Steven, it's kind of strange that in over 20 years, the Texans don't really have many memorable free agent signings. Definitely not many splash signings, if you think about it.
No, they don't. I think, and I was thinking about this, too, in the opposite direction. They certainly had some busts in free agency. Maybe we should do a show on the worst free agent signings too. Yeah, I mean, you look back, they just have not typically made the kind of splashes, the big name free agents. And honestly, I don't think that's a bad thing, Robert, because you really, especially at certain positions, I mean, you're taking a chance, throwing that kind of money at some of these guys. And a lot of them, you know, you see other teams do it and you're kind of green with envy until they get an injury or until they're not quite as effective. So I'm not necessarily that disappointed that the Texans haven't made that many splashes. But what I would say is this year, they have the chance to at least make some smart quality signings, not just because they have the cap room, but they may have, you know, more of a pool of guys that want to come to Houston for the right price, of course.
Right. And, you know, we don't have the top five worst Texans free agent signings, but as we've teased at the top of this, we've got our top five all-time Texans free agent signings, which to me, this was a pretty easy list, because there wasn't many guys outside of five guys I could come up with that should even have been on. Like, there wasn't a lot of runner-ups. Let me put it that way.
No.
The funny thing is, my number one guy wasn't even signed during the traditional free agent period. Kind of cheated on that one. Steven, my number one is the undrafted Arian Foster.
I mean, he was a free agent. I mean, if you don't have to classify with, you know, unrestricted free agent or, you know, limited, he was a free agent. So he counts.
Yeah, he's the best running back in Texans history. Signed in 09 for 1,000-yard seasons, four Pro Bowls, two All-Pros. Twice he led the NFL in rushing touchdowns. Steven, I don't even know if there's any debate on this. It's an easy call for me if we're doing it this way.
Yeah, no, I don't see how. And again, I would certainly count him on that list, because if you think of free agents, yeah, I know you think of poaching from other teams, but this guy was not drafted. And I am always cheering for the guys who sign as undrafted free agents, and then they surprise everybody and make it big. And, you know, the only regret, Robert, I wish he could have played a little bit longer and been more effective, but he certainly, for a few years there, he absolutely was the Texans' best running back, but really the offense that drove the Texans' passing game.
My number two is, I think, what everybody thinks of in this free agent period, the best Texans free agent signing. And of course, I'm talking about the Bengals cornerback, Jonathan Joseph, when they signed him in 2011, JJO got 5 years, $48.75 million, $23.5 of that was guaranteed. He went to two Pro Bowls, was an All-Pro his first year, and wasn't just a great starter. He was also a hell of a leader. The Texans made six playoffs, Steven, during JJO's nine seasons in Houston.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, they signed him right on the lip of when the Texans started winning. And he was definitely a key cog in that defense. And you said it, Robert, what he did on the field, you know, you can look at the stats and see for yourself. But time and time again, players, coaches would talk about his leadership ability. And that's big. I mean, it really is big in the locker room and on the field. You know, he was really the defensive leader for some of those years, certainly. And a big part of why the Texans were winners for those few years.
also a super nice guy. I got to deal with him a lot in the locker room over the years. Number three on my list, let's go to 2010 when they signed the super underrated guard from the Chiefs, Wade Smith. And I know this is a name that a lot of Texans fans might not have thought of, but the former Houston Sports Talk, check the archives. He was a total glue guy on those first couple of playoff teams for the Texans. His deal, 4 years, $12 million, $5.25 million guaranteed. Started every game at left guard for 4 years, paved the way for Arian Foster, who we just talked about, and made the Pro Bowl in 2012, Stephen.
Yeah, and you know, some signings, you know, some of the quiet signings or, you know, the guys that you just don't think about much are actually some of the most valuable. And it reminds us again of just how difficult it is to find great players in the trenches. You know, especially, you know, you look at what the Texans are going through with their offensive line the last few years. Wouldn't you love to have a guy like Wade Smith at left guard right now, Robert? Because that's what we've been kind of going over for the last couple of years. And speaking of podcasting or broadcasting, you know, Wade Smith, I think he does some local broadcasting, if I'm not mistaken, or did.
Yeah, Wade Smith is just one of those names from those Texans teams that's just under the radar, and we don't take left guards for granted right now. If you watch the
Texans, that's why I said that.
The last couple of years, it's like, oh, that's a position we could sure use a Wade Smith right now. But my number four guy, the same March they got Jonathan Joseph. Everybody remembers this. It was a twofer, and the other guy was Bears safety Danielle Manning. They got him for 4 years, $20 million, $9 million guaranteed. Manning helped Joseph solidify that secondary that, you know, just helped you get to the playoffs for the first time. And at times, even Manning was a pretty good return man. Like, we forget about that, but he was good.
That's right. He was. He did some returns and, you know, had some electric ones. Yeah, you know, you need guys, both those guys, him and Joseph, you know, to anchor the defensive secondary. That's really key. And again, the Texans could use both of those guys right about now.
All right, my number five guy, and I could have gone with a few names. I could have gone with the Ninja, Antonio Smith, or Steve McKinney, or even Shane Leckler. People forget that he was a free agent that lasted, I guess, maybe 5 years and was a really good punter during that time. But I'm going with the current Texan. Nobody's played more games in a Texans uniform. He is a former Houston Sports Talk guest who won the Curly Culp Award in high school for his defense. But you guys know him for his 14 years as the Texans log snapper, Mr. Texan John Weeks.
You think John Weeks is going to play until he's 70, Robert? Because I'm telling you, it's just amazing. And I know, you know, a lot of people don't really think about the long snapper. And gosh, you know, he just snaps the long snaps every once in a while. But listen, that's a valuable thing on a team. It's an underrated position. And gosh, nobody's done it longer, and I would say better, than John Weeks. I mean, honestly. And I'm kind of glad you got him in there, Robert, because you know, we were looking over the others we were just talking about. Most of those guys that you mentioned were from pretty far back. I mean, it's again, the Texans haven't made a lot of splashes lately or had those kind of guys that you'd have to really fight to try to get them on the list or maybe have to leave off the list. So I was going to go with Antonio Smith on that one, but now that you said John Weeks, it makes perfect sense. Let's get a current guy on there at least.
And maybe, I don't know what you think, Stephen, maybe Dalton Schultz needs to be number five now on this list.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to give him another year or two, but he certainly would be on the cusp of it because, again, he was so big and so clutch late in the season, not just with that catch, but, you know, he had some other key catches toward the end of the season too, that he just provided that veteran presence on the offense, especially a tight end. Wasn't too bad of a blocker. So, yeah, I think we will be mentioning his name. If we do this list again next year, we might very well have to put him on it, knock somebody off.
Right, and hopefully there's another name or two that Casario is working on as we speak. But, hey, let me know if you disagree with my top five. Let me know what you think of signing Singletary and Tony Pollard or DeAndre Swift instead of, you know, of course, signing Saquon Barkley.
Or Saquon Barkley, yeah.
So, yeah, let's switch gears to the Astros. Joe Espada says Justin Verlander will start the season on the injured list. Stephen, where's your panic meter at?
It's not registering, Robert. It's just not registering. It's not a surprise. I mean, look, he was on the IL to start last year with the Mets, you may remember, because of an actual injury. Now, they are, you know, they're downplaying this whole shoulder thing as just, you know, some inflammation or, you know, discomfort, what have you. But the fact that he's behind in his pitching routine, I mean, it's definitely cause, not for alarm, but just, you know, you have to wonder. And honestly, Robert, and I will predict this right here and right now, you can save it. I might have to eat my words, but you know, Justin Verlander has an option next year with his contract if he pitches at least 140 innings. Well, I am going to tell you, I don't think he's going to reach that. I just don't. I think he will be healthy for most of the season, but I'm just not sure if he's going to be able to do that many innings, especially considering what's going on right now.
Do you think it helps the Astros that Justin Verlander might pitch less innings come October if they get there?
Yes, I do. And I'll also say this, it's better to put him on the IL now than in August or September. If it has to happen, let's do it now. But when you get him back, depending on what the pitching depth is at that point, who's effective, who's not, I definitely think that, you know, especially in stretches where you don't have to go with a six-man rotation, give him an extra day. I mean, I know he's, you know, pitchers are creatures of routine, but they also need rest. And with Justin Verlander in that case, I would definitely do it.
The good news for the Astros pitching staff is JP France, according to Espada, looks like he is on schedule to start the season, barring any setbacks. And so that leaves you in pretty good shape, Stephen, because if France is ready, you know, you've got five guys that you like out there. Arcidia's pitched well, or at least one of his outings. I know he had a really good outing in spring training. Fromber, which we're going to get to in a second.
Yeah, we'll get to him.
Christian Javier, and then, of course, Hunter Brown. So you got five guys right there.
And, you know, here's the other wild card in this, Robert. You have to hope that JP France is ready to go, because when the season starts, the Astros are going to play something like 19 games in 20 days, or maybe it's 20 and 21. I can't remember. But that's when you would want to go with a six-man rotation, especially because, you know, at the beginning of the season, it takes a little while for the starters to ramp up and go, you know, five, six innings. That's probably not going to happen too much at the beginning of the year. So it is going to be really essential for the Astros to have some depth. And maybe a guy like Ronel Blanco is ready to fill that bill. He's pitched pretty well, too, in the spring. You know, it's just kind of an unknown. You know, they've been trying to tout him as a starter for the last couple of years. Maybe this is his time to shine. Spencer Arrighetti has done well. I just think that he might need a little more seasoning in the minors before I'm ready to throw him in there. But who knows? You may have to, depending on what your depth is at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, this is a good time also to remind everybody that tomorrow, actually, I'm going to have a show with Kenny Van Doren that contributed to Astros Future. We're going to talk about some of the guys in spring training and some of the minor league guys that Kenny is real knowledgeable on. So you're going to want to listen to that. But the other big story with the Astros, Fromber's calling his own pitches, Stephen. You like this idea?
No. And it didn't go very well, did it? What did he get? Four batters out in the 10 that he faced? Let me just say this, Robert. I'm a purist, I guess. I always look at the catcher as the captain of the field, basically, the signal caller, you know, that takes the pressure off the pitcher. And yes, I know you have to be comfortable with the pitches you're throwing to a batter, but you got to trust your catcher. Now, the only thing I would see, the only caveat I would put here is that you don't have Martin Maldonado behind the plate. I mean, do you think he would absolutely do that if Maldi was behind the plate? I don't think so. But here's my problem with it, Robert. I don't think Fromber has the mentality to do this. He's got more than enough in his head already. I think that's part of his inconsistency problem, is he thinks too much. And if you give him one more thing to think about, on top of the fact that when you get runners on base, you're going to have two less seconds to deal with that because of the rule change in the pitch clock. I just don't think that Fromber is the type of pitcher who would have the mentality to do something like that. You know, Justin Verlander, is he doing that? Now, if Justin Verlander says, hey, I'm calling my own pitches because we have a little less experienced catcher, you know, he certainly wouldn't say that. I might put more stock in that than I would somebody from Valdez. But even Justin Verlander, he's going to have a say to a point. And I think pitchers do have a say to a point. And I don't know if it's going to be as overblown as it sounds, but I just don't think I want Fromber tinkering around with this, especially when he needs to have a good season this year. And the less he has to think about, the better.
Well, you just basically blew up. The reason why Fromber's doing this is because of the stuff that's going on in his head, because he feels rushed. This way, he can call his own pitch. He doesn't have to, you know, change signs or whatever. He doesn't have to feel rushed. You know, he knows what he's going to throw himself, and he just says, this is what I'm going to throw. He tells the catcher, and it's over with. That's why he's doing it, Steve.
I know, but how many other pitchers in Major League Baseball are you hearing right now that are doing that? I mean, there may be a couple that I haven't heard of anymore except him. But, you know, why don't you just put a pitch comm on everybody, on every pitcher's belt, and let them do that? I understand the reasoning. Like I said, I understand why. And I do think the pitcher certainly should have some input of what pitch he's throwing. But I just don't think Fromber's the right guy to do it. I know one Grapefruit League game is not indicative necessarily that it's not going to work. But I'm going to tell you what, if he takes it into the regular season and he gets banged around, you know, enough said.
everything's going to get blamed on this if anything goes wrong, but I do kind of like it because it's kind of old school. It makes me think of the quarterbacks that used to call their own. You'd never see this anymore. Quarterbacks used to call their own plays. Remember this?
Well, that's true. You know, but of course in football, it's, I know it, in some cases it might be the same, but I kind of look at the catcher, you know, as being, he's the quarterback because he calls most of the pitches. But you could say, yeah, the pitcher is the quarterback because he's the one that you put the most reliance on when you're out there. So it could go either way.
Yeah, I need to see it a little bit, but I understand it from Fromber's perspective, and I understand it from your perspective, Stephen. I'm more on the fence about it. Let me see how it works out.
Yeah, we need to give it some time, I realize, but it just makes me nervous that he's just putting more into his head than he already has, and that's why he's been messing up, I think, at least part of the problem.
Any other Astros notes that you had before we move on?
Well, I know that, you know, they sent some guys to minor league camp, you know, that they had invited some of the guys that are going to be spending in the minor leagues. And I'm sure you and Kenny will get into this, you know, on the next day, on the next show. Jacob Melton was one of them, though. And we kind of talked about that he was one that we got to kind of keep an eye on because right now he's the Astros' top prospect. But it's really no surprise. None of the names that I saw that were sent down, none of them was a big surprise. I don't think any of them realistically, you know, Will Wagner was one, DeCenzo was one. These guys need a little more seasoning. So you're not going to see that with the big club. So I got my Astro shirt on. I'm ready for the regular season to start, Robert. Let me tell you, and it's coming later this month.
Yeah, they were just very complimentary. And I say they, really, Joe Espada, very complimentary of some of those guys. He's mentioned Will Wagner in a couple of different interviews. He's mentioned, you know, some of the other players that they sent down in other interviews as well. So it's very possible we're going to see those guys again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they wanted to get them at-bats. I think that was the biggest reason is you don't want them sitting around while you put your starters in and get them primed for the regular season. I think they wanted them to have more action, and I think that's very important, and they'll start the season that way too.
All right, let's move over to the Cougs. Disappointing news for the Cougs, really, despite a game-winning shot against Oklahoma on Saturday, despite them still being ranked number one, just the injuries. They've already lost Terrence Arsenault and Ramon Walker from the rotation, but the loss this past week of JoJo Tugler, it's a killer going into the postseason. Stephen, it's freshman Cedric Lath who's moved into the rotation. He was just getting garbage minutes before this.
Well, he's a very raw talent. And, you know, one of the biggest concerns for me for Tugler is, you know, yeah, he was coming off the bench and wasn't scoring a lot of points. It's 3.8 points a game. But he was getting to be one of the better defensive players and rebounders that the Cougs have. And as you and I both know, Robert, and I'm sure many of the Cougs fans know this, that is the backbone of your Kelvin Sampson team, is defense and rebounding. Well, you just lost one of your guys. You know, he had 4.1 rebounds. He also had 30 blocked shots in 28 games, and he started one game. So it's a big loss, Robert, especially when you've already, as you mentioned, you lost Arsenault with an Achilles injury, and then Ramon Walker Jr., the swing man, had that torn meniscus in his right knee. So, yeah, the front court especially is very thin, and it also leaves you the Cougars with an eight-man rotation. And, man, with the NCAA tournament coming along, it's really thin, especially with Cedric Ladd, as you mentioned. Just a very raw talent. That's who you've got in your front court right now.
Yeah, and then Juwan Roberts got his wrist split open.
Yeah, his hand got it taped up, and he was I think in practice he had it heavily bandaged. So
yeah,
that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you got to get that off before the tournament. You don't want him dealing with that too.
No. So yeah, the Cougars were number one again this week, Robert. I think I saw where they've now been number one in their history for, was it 20 weeks, I believe, and that includes the Elvin Hayes era, Phi Slamma Jamma. And I think half of those times, though, was Kelvin Sampson's teams.
Yeah, 9 weeks.
Almost Sampson. Half.
And don't forget that, you know, I think a lot of people go, well, they've done this a ton of times during some of the old Guy V. Lewis, you would think. But really, it's a lot less than I even thought, considering how great those, you know, they had three straight years where they went to the Final Four. And two of those years, they were in the finals and they lost the eventual champion all 3 years. So I thought, okay, they've been number one for a long time. Back in the 60s, I just assumed UCLA was usually number one.
Yeah. You know why back then, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would have thought so too. I kind of thought, wow, 20 is not a very big number. But I know there were some instances, and this even happened to them last year, where they got to be number one and then they lost and then they got knocked down and they may not have come back up in the rest of the season. So you have to take that into account. But, you know, it's a great thing. But like I said on the last podcast, I just want to be number one at the end of the season when they raise the national championship trophy. But in recent years, yeah, you've had maybe one major injury with the Cougars, but now you're talking three, and you don't know what condition Roberts is going to be in either. So definitely I got to be worried, especially in the Cougars are trying to win a Big 12 title. You know, they could clinch a share Wednesday night, and we're recording this on Tuesday. that could clinch a share of the Big 12 title and maybe even win it outright. But as you get into tournament time and you start playing a bunch of games a few days in a row, that's when I'm going to be the most concerned.
Yeah, as we're speaking, there's two games left. You know, the game on Saturday is the one everybody's looking forward to against Kansas, trying to get revenge for that. But if they win these last two games, there's no question. They've locked up the one seed and probably locked up the number one overall seed. They are the favorite. In other words, they've got the best odds to win the championship as we speak. So if they can take care of business these next two games, then really it gives you that opportunity to go, okay, let's not try to kill ourselves during the tournament. And then I'm talking about the conference tournament.
The conference tournament, right.
And then, you know, you also have an easier maybe first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament, and it makes life a little bit easier when you are as light on the bench as they are.
Until you get knocked off by a 14, 15 seed, then yes, it is pretty. But no, I see your point, Robert, and you're right. And, you know, like I said last week, I mean, this is kind of a wide open field, I think, as far as who is the favorite going in. I mean, I can't really name you a team other than the Cougars, just, you know, because they're sitting at number one right now. They're, at this point, the best team in the country.
Well, UConn, a lot of people are going to bet on UConn because they won last year.
They are, yeah. But I mean, even UConn hasn't been overwhelming. But if you're going to have a year like this where maybe you're going to kind of limp into the tournament, this might at least be the year where you have a shot. But, you know, this is the NCAA tournament, so nothing ever seems to go according to plan. But you're right. That it's just, there's no point in worrying about winning your conference tournament when you're going to be a pretty high seed in the NCAA tournament anyway.
I'm going to be right back because I think I just made me think I need to go tell Kelvin Sampson that he cannot have these guys practicing as hard because too many of them are getting injured and that this is not going to work going forward. I don't like this whole idea of really practicing hard all throughout the season because, I mean, look where it's got them. I mean, yeah. They've been terrible for the last several years and everybody's always hurt. So,
yeah, I get that. And no, I mean, in all seriousness, Kelvin Sampson's practices are pretty intense, but, you know, injuries are just part of the game. They're going to happen. And I don't know necessarily that it's hard practice, soft practice. You can say a coach doesn't practice enough and the players still get hurt. So, yeah. And I know some people are probably sitting out there saying, his practices are too hard. He needs to lighten up. It's the end of the season. But no, I don't think it has anything to do, you know, especially with these injuries that have happened this year.
Yeah, it should be fun. I can't wait for the tournament. Steven, I don't think we've discussed this, but we might have to do some live post games after the Cougs play their NCAA tournament games. What do you think?
Well, you know what? If they do, that means they're going deep into the tournament. So, you know, I'm all for that. It means they're winning. If we're doing post game shows, it means our teams are in the playoffs or in the postseason. So the deeper they go, then, you know, the more post games we get to do, right?
Absolutely, man. I would love for us to do about six
NCAA yeah, tournament six. Games. I think that's the most you can do in the NCAA, right? Six.
Well, unless you're like that. Playing in as a 68, 67 well, team.
And, you know, they're going to probably expand to, what, 76 or something? So we may have, like, four rounds of play-in games before we get it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's getting kind of ridiculous. It's like, well, can we just put everybody in the NCAA? Why don't we? Okay, let's just get rid of the regular season. Just make the whole season into an NCAA.
Yeah, like there's never enough. There's just never enough. And in pro and college sports, they're doing this. It's just never enough.
Yeah, at some point, it's got to be worth something, the regular season. It's just, you've got to make it worth something. And it's, you know, seeding, I guess, it's worth something, but it's ridiculous because we know, like, so many of these teams, like, come on, we know these play-in teams have zero chance of getting to the Final Four. It's not going to happen.
Well, it's just like having a 14-team playoff, you know, in college football. I mean, how many of those teams in the lower end are going to, you know, sneak up and beat somebody? Well, sure, it could happen, but I just don't know that, you know, I certainly think they needed to have more than four because you have Power Five schools, somebody's always left out every year, but 14. Yeah, I think maybe that's a little bit much, but they'll probably expand it to 20 in the next 5 or 10 years, Robert. Who knows?
Well, get into our archives. Scrolling at the bottom of the screen, you might have noticed, I talk about we've got a Houston sports history playlist. If people aren't super familiar with this or if you're new to the show, well, we've done interviews with so many great Houston athletes over the last decade of doing this show. And also, you know, if you want to just look up the Rockets history playlist with classic Rockets interviews or the Astros, or if you're a fan of a particular team, I've also got it separated out by team. And in that main history playlist, you know, I've got interviews with a former Houston Aero hockey player and also some other Olympians as well that we've talked to. Just, you know, some really good interviews that you're not going to find in some of those specific ones. But there's 200 as we speak, 200 either clips from interviews or full on interviews in that history playlist. Man. You could listen to that for
days, weeks. That's awesome.
Yeah, so go check that out. Again, it's Kenny Van Doren. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about what's going on with the Astros in spring training and some of these guys that you might not know their name. You're getting to know their name right now as you're watching spring training games or keeping up with things. But Kenny is an expert, and he follows all these guys. He's been following them all the way through the minor league. So you're going to want to hear what he has to say about them and where he's at on some of these guys actually making the major league roster potentially this year, even getting on the roster later this year, because that definitely can and probably will happen because the injuries happen every year. So we see it. So keep an eye out for that one. More Rockets shows coming up, of course, too. But thanks again for joining us. Thanks again, Stephen.
You bet, Robert. See you next time.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.